over and above the treachery of man stands the goodness of God, who in his providence orders all things according to his purpose.
Since God is sovereign, how do we account for evil in the world? The mystery of God's providence, next on Renewing Your Mind. It's an age-old question. What is the relationship between God's will and our choices? You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, and on this Monday edition of the program, Dr. R.C. Sproul begins a series called Providence, God in Control. We'll be talking about God's sovereignty all week, and R.C.'s thoroughly biblical explanation of how God works out all things according to his will is helpful as we wrestle with these difficult questions. We're making all 15 lectures from this series available to you in a 5-CD set. I'll let you know how you can request them at the end of today's broadcast. But right now, let's get started with a lesson titled, The Mystery of God's Providence.
In the city of Pittsburgh, it is possible to board a paddle-wheeled boat and go down the river all the way to New Orleans. Because in Pittsburgh, the Ohio River is formed, and the Ohio flows west and pours into the mighty Mississippi River that goes all the way to New Orleans. Now, those of you who are familiar with the city of Pittsburgh, at least from the perspective of sports, know that the Three Rivers Stadium was built at what is called the Point, where the confluence of two rivers meet and form the Ohio River. Those two rivers, if you're interested in trivia, are the Allegheny River and the one that nobody can pronounce, the Monongahela River. The Monongahela and the Allegheny meet at the Point in Pittsburgh and form the Ohio. We call it the confluence of two rivers. Now, what does confluence mean? It means flowing together with. Now, when we study the concept of the providence of God, one of the most important ideas contained in the doctrine of providence is the concept that is called historically concurrence or confluence. Both words mean the same thing. Concurrence, confluence, a flowing together with. And it has to do with this question: how God's purposes in his providential ordering and governing of this universe fit together with the choices, the actions, and the behaviors of human beings. How does God's will and my choices coincide? How do they meet? How do they come together? Is there a concurrence of divine purpose and human purpose? Well, one of the most important texts in Scripture that illustrate for us this concept of concurrence is found in the last chapter of the book of Genesis. We are reading the account of the end of Joseph's life. He has met his brothers, he has been reconciled with his brothers, but there's still an item on the agenda that needs to be treated. We read in Genesis 50, verse 15, that when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "Perhaps Joseph will hate us and may actually repay us for all the evil that we did to him." And so they sent messengers to Joseph, saying, "Before your father died, he commanded, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. And then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, 'Behold, we are your servants.'" Do you see what's going on here? The brothers never could figure out why Joseph didn't execute his vengeance the first time he discovered who these men were who had visited him in the court of Pharaoh. They hadn't forgotten the treachery that they had dealt their brother. And they were certain that Joseph hadn't forgot it either. You know the story of Joseph, how he was one of 12 sons of the patriarch Jacob, one of the youngest of the sons, but he experienced a special favor from his father. It was Joseph who was given the technicolor coat, the coat of many colors, a very beautiful and expensive gift that was coveted jealously by his brothers. It was Joseph who, as a young boy, had these extraordinary dreams. Revelation that came from God to Joseph in the night, and Joseph told those dreams to his brothers. Not perhaps a very advisable thing to do. He came to his brothers and said, I had a dream. And in this dream, he explained the figures that were taking place that would indicate that at some day in the future, his older brothers would bow down in obeisance before him. And what was the brother's reaction? Oh, that's nice, Joseph. You're most blessed of God to be given this preeminent position among us. No, 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 no. They were enraged. And their hatred grew to such proportion for their brother that they conspired together to destroy him. You know the story. They went out from their father's house, and while they were out doing the work of the family, they decided this was a golden opportunity to kill their brother, to throw him in a pit, bury him in the pit, and leave him there. And they took the many-colored coat of Joseph and they spread animal blood all over the garment. They were going to take that back to Jacob and say, Father, a wild animal came and devoured Joseph. And all that's left is this coat that is besmirched by his blood. But luckily for Joseph, so happened through the fortuitous circumstances of the hour, by chance, a caravan of merchants and traders happened by. And as luck would have it, they came near to where Joseph and his brothers were, and his brothers said, hey, we have a better idea. We can get rid of him and profit from it at the same time. Instead of killing Joseph, let's sell him. And so they sold Joseph to these foreigners who then took him to Egypt and sold him at the slave auction for profit. But again, as luck would have it, when Joseph's turn came to be put on the block for auction, and people around looked and saw what a strong, handsome specimen of a slave he was, the bidding became intense. One man bid $500, another man $1,000, and the bidding went on until finally the gavel sounded. And it just so happened that the sale went to a man by the name of Potiphar. And Potiphar brought Joseph and brought him into his house and gave him responsibilities that were given to slaves. And Joseph was so excellent in his management and in the display of his gifts of leadership that he kept getting promotion after promotion by the hand of Potiphar, so that Potiphar made him in charge of his whole household. But unfortunately, Potiphar was married to an ungodly woman who set her cap for the affections of Joseph. And you know the story, how Potiphar's wife came in and repeatedly tried to seduce Joseph. And now Joseph, being far removed from his own heritage, from his own religion, from his own church, from his own family, from the presence of his God, he thought, if he ever had the opportunity to indulge in sin in secret, this was it. But he said to Potiphar's wife, how can I do this thing and sin against my God? And he refused her. And hell knows no fury like a woman scorned. And in her rage at being rejected, Potiphar's wife cried, "Rape." And as Joseph was trying to leave, she grabbed his cloak. Once again, it's his garment that so unhappily brings so much trouble, because as Joseph fled, he leaves his coat behind. And when Potiphar comes home, Potiphar's wife says to Potiphar, "Your servant Joseph tried to rape me, and here's his cloak as proof." And Joseph was now thrown into prison. Not for a day, not for a week, but for years, he rots in prison, wondering about the providence of God. But again, through one of those fortuitous chance encounters, he's brought in his captivity into acquaintanceship with two incarcerated former members of Pharaoh's court, the baker and the butcher and the candlestick maker. And in that relationship, they discover that Joseph has an extraordinary ability to interpret dreams. And one of them has this nightmare, and Joseph interpreted to him and said, "This dream means that you were going to be released and you will go to Pharaoh's court and be restored to your position." And just as Joseph had predicted, it came to pass. And before this man, in his jubilation about being restored and released from prison, Joseph said to him, "Remember me when you come into the court." But as luck would have it, the man forgot all about Joseph, and no one came to Joseph's defense. He was a man apparently forgotten by the providence of God, until Pharaoh had a dream. A dream he couldn't figure out, but disturbed him. And he called on the court magicians and theologians and said, "What does this dream mean?" And none of them, in all of their collective wisdom, could come up with an answer to the Pharaoh's question. And then the man who had been released from prison goes to Pharaoh and said, "Pharaoh, excuse me. When I was in prison, I met a man, an extraordinary man, a Hebrew slave who displayed an uncanny gift for the interpretation of dreams. Maybe he can help you." And so Pharaoh ordered that this slave be brought out of his cell and into his presence, and Joseph came. And Pharaoh told him his dream. And maybe you look at it this way: Joseph made a lucky guess and interpreted the dream and told the Pharaoh there's going to be 7 years of great abundance of crops, followed by 7 years of unprecedented famine. He gave the Pharaoh in Egypt, the mightiest ruler in the world, 7 years to prepare for a worldwide famine. And Pharaoh was so pleased with Joseph that he put Joseph in charge of the building program to prepare for the famine. And Joseph did such a magnificent job managing these affairs that Pharaoh elevated him to the role of prime minister over all of Egypt. What a strange set of circumstances. Well, you know the rest of the story. The famine came. And in the midst of the famine, the Egyptians had all they needed to eat and more. But the people in the outer countries surrounding Egypt were starving to death, including a little family north of the border. It was headed by the patriarch Jacob. And so he gathered his sons and he said, "Sons, we don't have any food, but there's plenty in Egypt. Go down into Egypt and see if you can find provisions for us there." And so he commissioned his sons to go to the court of Pharaoh, to beg the Pharaoh for relief from the famine. And when they came, they were ushered into the presence of a regal, ruling prince, wearing the garb of an Egyptian, displaying the symbols of Egyptian authority. And they didn't recognize him because he spoke to them in the Egyptian language. But as fate would have it, he recognized them. And then the drama of the interchange and the interaction that went from there on will be the subject of a separate lecture that we'll have in this series. But the story's end is this: that Joseph acceded to the requests of his brothers, made the provisions necessary, invited Jacob and his whole family to now come in as being honored guests and to settle in the land of Goshen, where there would be more than enough provisions for the people. At this point in history, the provisions were given apparently by Joseph Jireh. Joseph will provide. And he did. But then as the years passed, Jacob died. And the brothers now are terrified. They're thinking that the only reason Joseph had not exacted vengeance upon them for their betrayal was out of love and respect for their father, Jacob. And now that Jacob is removed from the picture, they come and they're terrified and they beg for mercy from Joseph, as we have read. They fell down before his face. They said, "Behold, we are your servants. Yes, Joseph, we did sell you into slavery. Now we're willing, in our repentance, to become your slaves instead." But Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid. For am I in the place of God?" Now, there's a thinly veiled threat here. Joseph is saying to his friends, "Hey, I'm not your judge. If there's any vengeance to be taken, it's not going to be by me. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay." Joseph doesn't gloss over the depths of the treachery that he had suffered at their hands. But though he was placed in a position of judge over all of Egypt, he would not judge his brothers. That is for God to do. He says, "But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive." You meant to kill one person. Your intentions were utterly wicked and selfish. And Joseph is not minimizing that. He is not stooping to the level of calling evil good or good evil. He doesn't dance with his brothers. He doesn't deny the egregious sinfulness of what they had done. God knows what your intentions were. And your intentions in your behavior, in your choices, in your actions were evil. But God was not a mere idle spectator, even of the thoughts in your minds and of the wicked choices of your heart. But even then, God's sovereign providence was in control. That God himself had a purpose. God himself had an intention, and that intention was altogether good. And your evil desires could not thwart or set aside the perfect, righteous plan of God. "For you see, brothers," Joseph is saying, "God not only ordains the ends, but he ordains the means. So that even in the exercise of your own will and of your own choices and of your own freedom, God stands over and above all of that to bring about his righteous purpose." This doesn't minimize the guilt of the brothers any more than the guilt of Judas is alleviated by the fact that through his treachery, redemption came to the world. Because over and above the treachery of man stands the goodness of God, who in his providence orders all things according to his purpose. You meant it for evil. God meant it for good. There was concurrence here. There was confluence. So do not be afraid. for I will provide for you and for your little ones. That God in His secret providence, brothers, has appointed me, humanly speaking, to be your provider. An accident? A quirk of history? For one of a nail, the shoe was lost? Suppose Jacob never gave that technicolor cup. Suppose the brothers never got jealous, never sold their brother into slavery, never had that caravan come alongside, never having taken to the auction block to be sold to Potiphar, never met Potiphar's wife, never thrown into prison, never meet the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, never elevated by Pharaoh to the head of the empire, never offer relief to the Jews from the north, never give them the land of Goshen where the whole nation comes and dwells and becomes enslaved. Do you get it? No coat, no sale, no treachery, no prison, no prime minister, no Jews in Egypt, no Exodus, no Moses, no law, no Sinai, no prophets, no Jesus. All because of one miserable coat. That's the providence of God in confluence and in concurrence.
Well, those Old Testament stories aren't just stories, are they? They were real events in real time, and they teach profound truths about God's sovereignty. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind on this Monday. I'm Lee Webb. And I hope this lesson from Dr. R.C. Sproul has been a comfort to you. So many times we see circumstances in the world around us, and we ask, where is God in all of this? Well, as we saw in today's lesson, God works through difficult circumstances. Today's lesson comes from Dr. Sproul's series titled Providence, God in Control. There are 15 lessons in this series. We won't be sharing all of them this week, but we would love to send you the 5-CD set to give you the opportunity to study the providence of God further. When you contact us this week, we'll also include a crucial questions booklet from Dr. Sproul titled, Does God Control Everything? It's a quick and easy read, and we believe it's a great resource for you to give to someone else who may be struggling with this issue. For your gift of any amount today, we'll send you both the 5-CD set and the booklet. Our number is 800-435-4343, or you can make your donation at our web address, renewingyourmind.org. Your gift means so much to us here at Ligonier. Our goal is to equip believers to understand the faith and articulate it effectively. We accomplish that through teaching series like the one you heard today. So it's your generosity that makes it possible, and we appreciate it so much. The Apostle Paul tells us in the first chapter of Ephesians that God works out all things according to His will. But it's so easy to forget that, isn't it? Dr. Sproul's series is a great reminder that we can trust in God's sovereign will. Studying the providence of God realigns our perspective and gets our eyes off of our circumstances and back on God's faithfulness. We'll be happy to send you the 5-CD set containing all 15 lessons and the booklet titled, Does God Control Everything? When you contact us today with your gift of any amount. Again, our number is 800-435-4343, or you can go online to make your request at renewingyourmind.org. The series that we're highlighting this week is just one of dozens that are available on our website for you to stream at any time. If you miss any programs this week or just want to browse through the topics that are there, find out more when you go to renewingyourmind.org. Before we go today, Dr. Sproul has a Coram Deo thought, one last comment about God's sovereignty.
In our Coram Deo thought for today, I want to ask how many times in your life you have been able to see a crossroads, at least in retrospect, where something that took place that at the time seemed desperately awful, later on you began to realize that God was in it and that God was preparing you for something. Just as Joseph, who endured this suffering and said to his brothers at the end of the story, God meant it for good, but you meant it for evil. I think that's one of the hardest things in the Christian life is when we are suffering,
when we are destitute, when we are in pain, to really trust that God's hand is in it. It carries us to the New Testament promise that God works all things together for our good, for those who love Him and who are called according to His purpose. I don't think there's a week goes by in my life that I don't say to myself, "Whoo, this sure doesn't look good. This looks awful." But somehow behind it, there is the invisible hand of divine providence that is working this for my good. That's an integral part of the promise of God.
Tomorrow on Renewing Your Mind, we discover that Jacob learned what it takes us a lifetime to learn, that God's providence is always enough. We hope you'll join us.